Hi, this is the first podcast in a series, Conversations About Writing, between me. I'm Madeline Walker. I teach writing at the School of Nursing at UVic, and Lori Way, the director of the Writing Center at UVic. Our first talk is about feelings about writing, and maybe, Lori, you'd like to begin. We're going to say whatever we think.
I think one of the things that surprised me the most about writing my dissertation was how sick I felt when it came to the last 6 months of writing it. I felt like if I had to go back to it one more time that I was actually going to be sick. And I was really surprised by how negative that feeling was, and it was very hard to overcome it.
Yeah, I had similar feelings writing my dissertation. A kind of pressure that I felt coming down on me as if I were suffocating. And part of it was having to deal with everybody else's ideas about how I should write, including other people's ideas, who were scholars, but also my dissertation committee and so forth. So it's trying to negotiate yourself through what other people think. And I think that's something that students at any level can relate to, because they're getting the pressure from their professors about the assignment. It's not just simply writing for themselves. There's this whole other thing about audience, and I've got to please somebody. So how can we lift some of that for students that are struggling with these negative feelings?
I think one of the things to remember is to keep the writing that you're doing in perspective, and recognize that it's for a reason that you're writing it, because there's writing for yourself and then there's writing for others. And a lot of the academic writing that we do is writing for others, explaining our ideas or explaining our research. And if you can find ways to find joy in your ideas, then you can find joy in explaining your ideas.
That's so true. Yeah, there is certainly joy, particularly when you have a really good paragraph that you think you've really conveyed something very well. There can be a lot of joy. And there can also be relief when you finish something. I know that another feeling that students will talk about is panic, particularly when there's a deadline looming. One of the ways that I've dealt with panic is doing a kind of thing like using sort of methods that are out there. There's one called the Pomodoro method that I think has been because of that little tomato-shaped timer, but it's working at 25 minutes and then giving yourself a five-minute break. And it doesn't sound like a very long time, but in fact, I feel like if you write continuously or read or make notes for 25 minutes, the panic can lessen because you feel like you've accomplished something. There's a block of time in which you've done something. So panic for me is often alleviated by sort of these pragmatic techniques. And there's many of them out there.
Oh, absolutely. When you think that our ability to focus on something is between sort of 45 and 90 minutes, we definitely don't want to be pushing that, because we make it less effective,
right,
what we're doing in that block of time. And I think you're right. We can reduce panic by approaching what we're doing by thinking of it as a job that we divide into smaller tasks, then
yeah,
we tackle the tasks in a logical order, one at a time.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons, too, that students get, and myself included in here, that writers get feeling negative or worried about writing is because they invest themselves in it. And I like your point about separating that and seeing it as a job that we do. So much of the time, too, when there's what they consider negative feedback on a paper, it's about them as a person, whereas I encourage my students to try to separate themselves. It's very difficult because we personalize writing. But academic writing is, certainly it's a product of who we are, but it's also simply a product. Thank you. Hello, this is our second conversation about writing. I'm Madeline, and Lori's here with me, Director of the Writing Center at UVic. Today we're going to be talking about APA. I wonder, Lori, if you'd start.
Sure. One of the things that I like to tell students is that APA actually has reasons behind it. There are reasons why it is the way it is. And all citation styles are different because they reflect the discipline that they suit. And when we look at APA, we find that it uses a lot of headings and subheadings. And some people don't like this. They feel it makes their writing choppy and it takes away the need to write with flow. But we do find that this really signposted style of writing makes it easy to skim through a paper and find the sections that you want to read. So it doesn't assume that the reader starts at the beginning and goes straight through to the end of a piece of writing. Another thing about APA is that when you have a citation, you put the author and the year. And this is very important because the author, by stating who the author is up front there in the sentence, you highlight who it is, who has done that study or who has written that piece. And noting who the big people are in your field, the famous people with the big studies, the seminal studies, is very important in psychology and other social sciences. And APA is the American Psychological Association's style guide. We also have the year, because the year is very important of when the study was done. It tells us how old it was, how relevant it is, and also if that author has changed tacks in their research. They might have been looking at one thing in 1997, and then they're looking at it from a very different perspective in 2007. The reader will maybe know this author and know what they wrote in 1997 and 2007, and so by indicating up front in the sentence which study it is this author wrote can be very helpful information. The reader doesn't need to skip to the end for an end note or to the bottom of the page for a footnote. They get the information right there in the sentence.
Right, and Laurie, I agree with you that APA has many advantages, and of course just the first thing is that we need to have a style. We need to have some kind of framework in order to cite other authors and give them credit, and it's a professional courtesy, so I like students to see it as their friend rather than their enemy. And I also want to tell students that that when they use a style like APA, it's actually helping their writing rather than a detriment, and they don't need to know it all. So many students think, well, I have to memorize it or something, and no, it's about learning how to find the information. So if you can get the basics down, how to do in-text citation, how to do a reference page, all the rest of this stuff can be looked up either in the manual or with APA Style Blog, a wonderful group of people at APA who answer your questions and really give some background as to why APA works the way it does. I guess my complaints about APA are more about to do with nursing, because APA calls itself a style guide for scientific writing. And we know that nursing writing is really varied. It's not always scientific writing. There's so many different kinds. Much of it is philosophic, and many of the undergrad students are writing about relational nursing, which has to do with and are often giving their own stories. There's a lot of narratives. And so I don't think that APA always does a service to that kind of writing. So when they talk about always express things with economy of words and with clarity, that doesn't always fit with nursing writing. So I like students to have a kind of a larger view of it, use it for what it does, but also go a little bit beyond it, particularly in upper undergrad and in graduate programs. They're using APA, but they don't have to only use APA. They can stretch beyond it and use it as a tool rather than as a prison. So.
Absolutely. I think it's important to recognize that no matter where you study or what you study or where you work, there's going to be a style guide that you're expected to follow. So whether you're given a book that you follow or whether you just have to cobble it together from looking at other correspondence, you still have to follow the style.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hi, this is Madeline. This is our third conversation about writing. I teach writing at the School of Nursing, and Laurie Way is the director of the Writing Center at UVic. This time we're going to talk about clear writing, what makes writing clear. And I'd like to ask Laurie, what do you think contributes to clear writing?
Sure. Well, there are lots of things that can contribute to clear writing, and so however many people you ask, that's the number of different answers you'll get. But in my experience, I think that the number one contributor to clear writing is knowing what you're going to say before you start saying it. And so this means you can be doing a lot of free writing and journaling about your ideas to come to understand what you're thinking. But when it comes to writing that draft for academic situations or in the workplace, that you really understand what is it that you want to say to your audience so that it can be laid out very clearly.
Right, and I was confused by that whole pre-writing process, thinking that I sort of was making a fuzzy line where that sort of spilled or seeped into the finished product. And I see now that really when you think about who you're writing for, the audience thing makes a difference. So clear writing is when you really have your audience in mind, and I prefer to think of one reader rather than an audience, which sounds like a lot of people, one intelligent, sympathetic reader, but who I really need to show along the way. I kind of have to lead them down the garden path. I like that metaphor because it adds to this idea of the through line, which is another metaphor. Sorry about that. I'm mixing my metaphors. But the idea is that I lead you, my reader, through my ideas, and there needs to be that kind of coherent narrative down that path. So it means that sometimes I have to come in and with my voice and say, Don't get me wrong. This is not what I'm saying. I'm actually saying this. And that's where meta-narrative can help. So there's a number of things that add to clear writing. I think it's that through line. And you need to do, as Lori said, you need to know what you're saying first, which would be your thesis. And then you need to lead people to show them why you think the way you do. And sometimes you need to interject a little bit and show them with words like, next I'm going to say. This is also called signposting. There's kind of a lot of different ways. But it's the saying what you're going to say and then showing, taking the person through the paper right to the end with a sense that they're following with you in your steps beside you.
It's important to note that different cultures think differently about what is the writer's responsibility and what is the reader's responsibility. And to some cultures, this hand-holding of the reader through is actually quite patronizing. But it's important to note, if you are from a different rhetorical culture, that in North American academic writing, we assume that our reader is tired, hasn't had enough coffee, is checking their text messages while they're reading, or it's their 30th paper that they're reading that day. And so we really do have to be super clear about what it is we're saying. Whereas in other cultures, it would be almost insulting to provide that much guidance to the reader.
I find that really interesting, the whole cultural perspective. And certainly, you know, I have to acknowledge that I am teaching a certain way. And there's not one, I don't believe there's one way of having clear or good writing. We bring to it, you know, our own ideas. And, you know, certain profs will have an idea that you have to have, say, what you mean in the very first two paragraphs. And others will be a lot looser about that and allow you to delay your point, you know. But I think we tend to generalize in this university environment that you need to front load and get your point out fairly quickly. That's one thing that I find most professors will agree on. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's a very good point. It's always a good idea to ask your instructor if they have an example paper of what they think is a well-written paper. It can give you some insight into what they think makes clear writing.
Right. I think a model paper is an excellent idea. I encourage all profs to do that. Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Madeline. This is our fourth conversation about writing. This is Lori Way, Director of the Writing Center at UVic, and I teach writing in the School of Nursing. Today we're going to talk about writing groups or making writing social. I was really influenced by a book that I'm reading by Wendy Belcher called Write Your Journal, Article in 12 Weeks, and one of her primary points is that we need to make writing social. When we're isolated, we wonder what other people are doing. We get frustrated. We get scared. We think that we can't do it. Whereas when we join with other people who can encourage and motivate us, our writing will move forward. What do you think about this idea about making writing social, Lori?
Well, I think it's really fabulous, especially if you are you have just graduated from your undergraduate degree and are therefore working and not in a social environment at the university anymore in terms of writing, or when you've done your master's or PhD level courses and then you're done, and then you're writing sort of in a vacuum without any sort of real signposts to let you know how you're doing and what your progress is like compared to others. I think that by making writing social, we, as you said, can support each other. We can serve as cheerleaders. We can serve as a figure to which we report. We can say, okay, my goal is to write 10 pages by next Friday, and then I check in with you. And even if whether you care or not, whether I met my goal, at least I'm reporting to someone about my progress.
Right. It kind of makes you accountable in a way that sort of being part of a group where you're trying to quit smoking or exercise makes you accountable to the group. I recently started a group on a Google group with a bunch of other women writing, and the problem we're having, I think, is that we're all from very different disciplines, and so the content piece isn't working for us. But what I think can be good is just the check-in every Friday or every Sunday. How did your week go? How much did you write? Where did you run into problems? And I think that's where I'm thinking that writing groups can really help, rather than necessarily sharing the actual writing, which may or may not work. I mean, that gets you into peer review, which has its purpose, but isn't always. It can run afoul, particularly when people's feelings get hurt.
Absolutely, and when we do read each other's writing, it adds more work to what we have. And I know that a lot of students are not only students, they are parents, they are workers, they are siblings, they are sons and daughters and friends, and there's a lot going on for all of us. So if we can find a way to make writing social that isn't really demanding on each other and is more of a support network, then that can be a really positive thing.
Right, yeah. Reminded by Wendy Belcher's, the way she opens her book is by saying that writing is to current day what sex was to 19th century Vienna. Nobody's talking about it, sort of that comparison of the closet activity. And for me, it does take some courage to say, you know, particularly since they call me the writing scholar, to say, you know, I actually really struggle with this daily writing habit, with writing. I haven't got the solution. I don't know what the best way is. I'm still trying to figure it out. So it's that kind of sharing of feelings that I think breaks down some barriers, makes people comfortable.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's important to remember, and by being part of a group, we can remember that all published authors used an editor or had an editor go through their work. Nobody gets it right the first time. What we're doing is not poetry. We're not writing lyrics or odes or haiku, and therefore it doesn't always come from this place of inspiration. Actually, most of it is just really hard work, and having some friends along the way can really ease the process.
Yeah, you said it. Thanks, Lori.
Thanks.